This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, oh. O'Reilly Auto Parts.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
I'm KC.
And I'm Tyler.
And you're listening to
The Element Podcast.
We're tired.
What's happening, all you people? Okay, here's the thing. It's the rut. Scary,
it's
right?
It's going.
tumbleweeds are going everywhere. We're tired because we're doing a lot of hunting, and I know y'all are probably tired too if you've been hunting, or you just might be tired because you listen to us and we're tiring. We've been dealing with some sickness, been dealing with some bucks, been dealing with all kinds of hot weather and moons and trucks and ducks and all that other stuff. Keep on rhyming, you'll get
tiny
in trouble.
Bucks.
Tyler, how do you feel right now?
Terrible.
Do you?
Not terrible.
How's your knot?
Man, it ain't a top knot. It's a middle knot. I got rice cooking in the microwave.
Oh, no.
I got a knotty stomach, and I've got a little bit of exhaustion that's being fueled by some sort of, like, caffeine/B vitamin drink that's supposed to be real good for you. And it gets me going, but, like, it also has this kind of, like, when you're exhausted and then you do something like this, you can get the nauseous feeling going real quick, mm-hmm. You know,
every hunting season, I think I wear myself out on some sort of vice.
Yeah, pizza.
Last year...
for me, last night.
Last year, it was kombucha. I drank a bunch of kombucha, and now I'm not even a kombucha drinker anymore.
Golly, that's sad.
I know. And then this season, I think it's sparkling waters. Like,
really?
I don't know if I like them that much right now, which is weird, right? Because I just love sparkling water, but I kind of feel...
Dude, I hope you don't wear yourself out on deer.
I know, dude.
You better slow down.
I think it's going to take a few... to make that happen. We were actually...
Oh, you shot a few.
We were sitting around in the tent. We have a pop-up camper right now. We inherited this thing.
Yeah.
And last night, you know, pop-up campers are about as snuggled as you can get outside of being in a tent with five guys.
Burgers and fries.
Burgers and fries, yeah. We were talking about how many bucks one fellow could actually kill this year. And Tyler tells me... if you kill 10 bucks, he actually said deer, but I'm assuming he meant bucks. He said, if you kill 10 bucks, I'll quit hunting. And I was like, I started doing the math, like, dude, there's no way I can kill 10 bucks. And then
thought about
we got
some
the
tags.
Lay in there for a while. I started thinking about the tags I have, and Tyler was already asleep, I'm sure.
Yep.
And then I said, there's a hunt in January that I got.
Yeah,
I might make it to 10. And a
couple hunts in December.
Everybody started laughing, and I could tell Tyler was pretty much asleep still.
Yeah.
But, yep.
Not for long, though. Only for a few hours I was asleep.
That's right.
19 I was.
48 a.m. now.
That's exactly right.
That's how I feel.
I woke up in the middle of the night and threw up a lot.
Yeah. In fact, I could count the numbers outside.
Well, there was more than... You could probably tell, but there was more than one in the first pile, for sure. The second pile, too. It just got, like, progressively more faint. It was like a shadow of throw-up piles.
I don't know what the sickness has been about, but it started with Michael, and then it went to me, and then now potentially you have it, but it's, like, delayed quite a few days each time.
Yeah.
I feel like there's something weird that we're eating or something. Tyler says probably. This is a soured milk that I poured him last night, but I don't think that's what it
was. Nasty. Somehow I was so hungry that I still just swallowed it before I even tasted it, you know?
I can't believe you swallowed it.
Dude, it hit the mouth and went down, and I was like, ah!
So that's a pretty funny situation. We're having celebration cookies, all right? And, you know, you gotta have celebration cookies with milk. Well, I pour some milk. We have three different jugs of milk. Don't ask me how. Mm. And... I pour some milk, and we start having some drinks of that with our cookies, and I'm like, this milk is a little bit sour. It's not bad.
I never even tasted it.
I could tell just a little bit.
But I just believed you.
It wasn't the freshest.
And I shouldn't have.
So I say, okay, let's get out a different jug. So I get out the other jug that is still in date. Okay, that's like the sell-by date.
Isn't it a whole gallon?
It's like three quarters, probably.
Oh,
yeah.
That's the problem.
It has been opened.
That's the problem.
And I pour some of that. Well, it ends up, it's more like the flavor of yogurt and somewhat the consistency of that when we go to drink it.
Dude.
So instead of fixing the problem, I made it much, much worse by suggesting we go to another gallon of milk.
I hammered the first sip straight to the gut. Could not get it out until about 4 hours later.
Oh, man. Pizza and cooks, man.
Pizza
I think
cooks and sour milk.
You also... in a act of prophecy, we were sitting around the cookies, enjoying ourselves, and you asked me how many cookies you could eat without making yourself throw up.
Yep.
I think whatever number you ate is one over that number.
That's a lot like your bucks. I lost count, so I couldn't tell you how many, but it's a lot.
Well, guys, we want to talk some rut tactics stuff. I know everybody is in the heart of that right now. And it's a fun time of year. Can be hectic, can be frustrating, and it can be glorious, all wrapped up into one little itty bitty moment. Okay, so we're going to talk some tactic stuff, and we're also going to talk about our hunts in Kansas and how they were a lot different, how that went, and who shot what. Mm. So, Tyler,
yes,
on
sir.
That note, we head to Kansas.
Yep.
And pretty much your story starts right there.
Yeah, I've hunted about 2.5 days this season.
How's that work?
Well, went to Kansas and sat in a stand. If you watch the buck that I shot last year, if you watch that video, you'll see
Speaking
me sit in the
sick.
Stand. Yeah, I was a lot sick last year. And hunted this particular stand, two stands. Well, it's two kind of stand locations. I moved around different little... That little area of that stand, of a couple of those stands, just to try to play the wind on each side of the draw and stuff like that, you know. Well, I ended up going to this remote stand location. It's takes the longest amount of time to drive to on the whole property. Nobody really goes up there much, and there it's wild right there. Like there's a hole just north of there that like even the cattle guy doesn't go, and deer don't see people. They literally don't see people. And so, I ended up going up there to hunt that location, which I hunted several times last year, and was hunting for two, what I thought were 10 points, basic mainframe 10s. One of them had a little bit of junk. The other one was pretty clean, but he did have a G5 on one side, I found out, and he's a big 11. Me and Eric had the kind of we had an issue with what he was looking at. I was looking at the buck, the big buck, with 11 points, but I thought was a 10 point, saying, there's that big 10, there's that big 10, and he's filming like a 140-inch 10 point that's busted up.
Sounds like a big 10.
That's behind the other big 10.
There's a couple big 10s around.
Yeah. And so we didn't get footage of the big one. And I also spooked the little one because I was moving when the other 10 wasn't looking, but the little one was looking at me. So anyway, back and forth between these stands, hunting these two bucks, and the other 10 that I was hunting, he was spending a lot more time in this remote location last year. Heavy, probably had like, I know one of his G4s was probably like 6 inches, so like pretty awesome deer for sure. And then ended up bumping that day that we had the confusion. I bumped that buck, or that messed that whole thing up, right? And then the other stand, the remote stand, didn't hunt well on a wind. Well, I'm like, all right, I'll just go out to some public and sit and watch. And next thing you know, I'm 50 yards shooting the biggest buck of my life. And that's kind of how that ended.
Speaking of big bucks, there's one right over the ditch. It's a little bit, yeah. Not quite what I need for rattling antlers.
So anyway, this location is where I ended up on the first day of this trip. And it's a pretty cool place, man. Like I said, super remote. We get in there. It's hot. As everybody knows, the rut's been hot. I think it's in like the mid-70s. Sunny. And Eric and I get set up, and I'm in the stand that's like a pre-hung stand. It's like an octagonal shape. What are they called?
It's called a moon stand. Isn't that what it's called?
No, it's called like a Woodsy 2 or something like that. It was made by a guy like in West Metroplex or something like that, Dallas, DFW area. Made a bunch of them. They're octagonal. In the middle, they've got a post and a boat seat, and it swivels in all directions so you can shoot in all directions. It's a really awesome, comfortable stand. So anyway, my dad got into those like 15 years ago and has bought several of them, and that's what we had set up there. So I get up here, and I'm like, just kick back, you know. I'm up in a gigantic cottonwood, not super high, and I kick back and start playing solitaire on my phone because it's early, it's hot. And it's November 1st, and I play a couple games. I win, and when I won the first game, I said, all right, I'm done. I went into the book of Daniel, read the last two chapters of that I had to finish up to read through that book, and then went on into Hosea, read a couple chapters. I get into the second chapter, and it's still early, and fairly early, I feel like. And Eric's like, hey, there's a buck. I was like, ah. It was windy, you know. I'm like, caught me, you know. And I don't move. I'm like, how far? And he said, 50. He's not a shooter, though. And I'm like, oh, well, if he's not a shooter, it's windy. I'm just going to look up, even if he's 50. Well, I look up. He ain't looking at me. And he's like, Eric made a good call. But, like, I'm surprised at how quick he was like, ah, not a shooter. Because this thing was like he was really technically a 10, but his fours were like 1 inch. But he was like 125-inch deer, probably. Like, he was a solid buck, you know. And but not a shooter on that property, and Eric knows that. So the deer comes and makes a scrape. It's like, man, I'm like, I think he got really cool footage of it. I'm getting like some phone footage of it. And then he comes on down and works right in front of us, like 15 yards. Comes by. We had hung a camera on that trail that he's walking by, right beside it. Well, when he goes like kind of downwind of it, I guess he spooks, and I'm like, I guess he just runs like 10 yards and kind of gets weird, and I'm like, what is going on? And I'm like, I guess he got the wind off the strap on that camera or something, you know. I don't know what happened there. And so he's standing at like 30, and Eric's standing kind of on a branch with his cruiser tether rope attached to this limb or whatever, this big cottonwood.
Not on a platform?
No. He's standing on a gigantic cottonwood branch.
Dang.
And
that's difficult.
It was cool. I mean, it's a big branch. It's okay. Like plenty comfortable.
Yeah.
And then, so he's on my right. And then between us is a gigantic trunk of a cottonwood. And this buck, if you can imagine, is like almost to that cottonwood trunk. I can still see him pretty good. I'm not having to lean or anything, you know. But like if he steps like another 5-10 yards, he's kind of out of my view without me leaning out to see him, you know. So but he came from the direction that we usually have deer come from, so I'm expecting deer to come from that direction and eventually work up to a food source that's like 3/4 of a mile away. That's kind of the main thing, because we'll talk about this in a little bit, but food's pretty scarce, especially this year. Uh-huh. Up in this country, and food controls everything. And so Anyway, he did look up the drainage the other direction from where he came from, where I don't expect deer to really come from. But he never got alert. Nothing. Didn't like I did not think that there was another deer in the area, right? And I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden I'm watching this deer at like 30 yards, and between this 30-yard deer, about halfway in between us, I see movement coming out from the tree trunk at 15 yards, and it is one of the bigger deer I've ever had a chance to shoot. And I knew immediately which deer it was. And it was kind of cool because he had his main beams are kind of turned up a little more this year. Almost like we talked about it, it almost looks like a different another tine when they do that, you know. Really cool deer. But it's the big heavy 10 from last year that I chased that was in this remote area a lot, right? He will score less this year. And we think that this is drought associated more than anything, but I also know that this deer is like old. Mm-hmm. Not super old, but he's somewhere between 6 and 8, maybe 9 at the most. Like, he's probably a 7 or 8 year old deer, I would say. Because he's been around. He was a thick nasty last year, and he's a thick nasty this year. And literally, I saw the antlers, knew who he was, and so immediately start looking at his body. And it may be the biggest body deer I've ever shot. His neck is ridiculous.
He has a big front end. That's
his chest,
for sure.
Too, man. Yes. Yeah, his chest is huge, man. Mm-hmm. He's a little bit kind of run down, ruddy looking a little bit, or maybe just like old man skinny in the back end. But mm-hmm. his chest is giant, and his neck just comes straight out of it, same size, you know. Weird, like he had these like this weird like bristle effect to his hair around his chest and around his neck too. That was like your deer that you just shot, way smoother.
Oh,
coat, you know what I mean?
Oh, throwing it
yeah.
out there.
Yeah, up in
Saskatchewan,
Washington State.
Yeah.
So anyway, he's coming kind of into my shooting lane, going kind of opposite directions. And it's weird. Like I would never have guessed, based off the other deer's demeanor, that this deer was in the even remotely close.
Mm-hmm.
And he's within 15 yards of that deer. Well, he just kind of comes by and he ignores that deer and is literally broadside. I'm freaking out. I'm like, Eric, right here, big buck, right here. Like, between, I'm like trying to, yeah, I can't even get the words out. I'm like, and finally, I'm like, between us and the deer.
Oh, Eric's filming the other buck.
Yeah.
And, yeah,
so he's locked into the screen, right?
Yeah.
And so he doesn't know at first. And so I finally get it out, like, hey, between us and the other buck. And he goes, oh, yeah. He sees him. He gets on him and goes, I'm on him. And I'm like, because I told him, I was like, I'm grabbing my bow, and I'm like, I'm shooting him, just so you know, kind of thing. And I mm-hmm. grabbed the bow. It's windy, so, you know, could about near do jumping jacks in a big cottonwood with leaves on it. Man, just ideal, right?
Mm-hmm.
Grab my bow, pull it back. He's like 15 broadside, and I have only a couple windows because this stand is so remote. It just doesn't stay maintained, you know. He comes into the first window, and I'm like, Matt. And he stops briefly, but with the wind, I guess, like, it's not even enough to shoot. The last buck I shot, guys, you probably heard the story, but South Dakota, about a month prior. And I made a bad shot at like 10 yards. And so I'm a little bit sketched a little bit on it, I guess, and I just wanted to make a good shot. So when he started to take off again, I just held off, had one more little window, and he literally stopped in the window on his own and like sniffed the ground or something, and I put it on the money. Like, it's 15 yards, so you know, people aren't probably too impressed with that, but I just was glad for my own confidence in shooting and stuff that, like, and I really did, like, take that extra second, you know, which mm-hmm. literally may not even be a second, as you know, KC. Like,
yeah.
it may be a half second, but in your mind, it feels like 2 extra seconds.
It's an intention.
Yes,
you know?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
And made sure that my pin was not just behind the shoulder, like you kind of hear growing up or whatever, but, like, in the pocket, dude, mm-hmm. like, above the elbow, you know, and just smoked him. Takes off running. And I'm like, smoked him. I knew it, said it probably on camera. Takes off running, runs kind of through this draw, back up the other side, and I see him. I'm pretty sure he's falling, almost 100% sure he's falling as he goes behind cedars. So anyway, I was like, we were stoked, man. And I was just kind of disbelief, and it happened so fast that I literally didn't even – I got shakes after, but I was shaking like 10 minutes later, whereas like in the first minute after, I hadn't even developed the shake yet,
yeah,
hardly, you know.
Sure. I remember this. We were talking a lot about this stuff on the way up there, and I kind of jokingly but thought it could be possible. I told you that I thought that this was one of your better nights to be able to kill a deer.
Yeah.
Because no one had been in there all year long, mm-hmm, and it's just like an undisturbed place that deer like to live. Like, of course it's going to be good, you know. And you had like a good wind to hunt it too. Mm-hmm. We talk a lot about the like 45 wind or whatever you want to call it. It's not really a gist off, but it's a deer favorable hunter difficult wind, and that's pretty much what you had. Like that buck,
I thought I had a great like a 180 wind, but that buck,
he came in with the wind pretty much in his face.
Yeah,
right?
And I started thinking about it on the way in. I was like, man, there's also a cistern up here, mm-hmm, like. And it's super dry up there, guys. Like, I'm talking so dry. Like, emergency haste situation, you know. And between food and that water being right there, I'm pretty sure he just bedded right there, not far off the water. He probably came down this morning, drank water, went right to bed instead of going down past me, you know. And probably not super fired up and ruddy just yet, even though he had, like, four broken tips and tines.
Yeah.
But not like super chase mode, you know, just mad at other deer, other, mm-hmm, bucks. But yeah, like he probably just bedded right there and then, you know, decided to work into the wind that night for a little while instead of, you know, going straight up to the food source with the wind at his tail or whatever.
Yeah. Making a little loop-de-loop. Yeah. You know, see what's going on, yeah, down now. So let's talk a little bit about that, on the rut tactic front before we kind of go back into story stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's this thing that I've kind of noticed, and I think that whitetail tactics across the board can be used in a lot of different places, but there's this, there is the concept that Iowa is the think tank of whitetail hunting, or like that central Midwest,
Illinois, Missouri, Iowa, Ohio.
All that right in there is like where all thoughts and tactics and everything kind of radiate out of. Besides like rattling, which came from Texas, like that's where most tactic strategy, a ton of the media comes from, all that country. And then people try to paint a broad stroke across the U.S. and make everywhere like that. You know, like you'll see people in East Texas making their little nice little kill plot and stuff like that. And it's like, you know, whatever. Anyways, I think that one of the things that comes from that is that in those particular places, food is almost rarely a scarcity. However, in other parts of the country, food is often a scarcity. So it really, really changes the way that deer behave. And even more so, water can also be the same thing. So like, mm-hmm, the limited resource stuff really plays a part. In Iowa, oftentimes the limited resource is cover. And so if you find,
or think about
cover,
Illinois,
or bedding, yeah,
you know, like, so some of the stuff we've seen in Illinois, cover is, I mean, it's what's it called, the prairie state,
mm-hmm,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because flat and open, you, mm-hmm, know, a lot of it.
Yeah.
But
so,
you're right.
Like, and cover is that way a lot of places, but I think that it's undervalued how much food still really, really matters during the heat of the rut.
Yeah.
And not so much because the bucks have to eat or drink, like they'll do their thing and they'll figure out, they'll eat a stick if they have to, you know, but the does don't really change their behavior all that much.
Yep.
And they're going to have to eat the whole time.
Tony Peterson just wrote an article for Meat Eater, and he interviewed me for it about rut stuff.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I was saying in that article, is pretty much the same thing. Like, doe bedding is kind of a tried and true thing to hunt during the rut. Because the doe bedding doesn't change throughout the year, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the only thing that can change doe bedding really is like kind of massive human intervention, which could be like human development or you know, cattle operations or, you know, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. Typically, human development, or somebody just, you know, spending a lot of time hunting in that area or whatever. But like overall, that doe bedding is going to relate to food. And it's going to be pretty consistent overall. So,
and
you know,
one of the things about doe bedding is that it's not actually that wind dependent sometimes, especially once you get out of some of these states like Iowa, Illinois, and stuff like that. Like, for instance, we've been in Kansas. There's does that bed in the same place every day, no matter what the wind is doing, and they just kind of change how they get there. Like, if the wind is favorable in the morning in their nose, they just kind of lollygag and make their way down. And but I watch them do this, right? If the wind is at their tail, they still have to go X direction to eat at night, and they have to go Y direction to go bed. So they you know, sun starts coming up, wind's at their tail. All they do is just get on their high horse and roll to get to the bedding, as opposed to just kind of meander. You know, like, but they still are traveling the same direction, bedding in almost the same spot.
Yeah, that's so, I mean, and that's what we're dealing with up here where we're at, is like a lot of the country actually is in drought conditions. And
literally
has been.
Right now, we can't see past a mile because of the dust.
Yeah, it's windy and just dust blowing.
It
and
is
so,
crazy.
Like the limited resource is food up here, but even more so right now. So if you're in that area, think about that. Like, how do you hunt? And to me, you know, just depending on what it is, it doesn't, you know, you can kill bucks, especially in the rut, close to food sources. And this morning I was texting you about this because we saw dozens of does between all of us classing this morning in different areas and driving and all that. And only a handful of bucks, and they, like, none of them were with does. And so it's kind of
weird.
I saw
one with does.
Well, okay.
But he wasn't hard. He, like, had a doe. It's like, so he's, like, probably three quarters of a mile away. And I think he was, like, a three-year-old, and he was broke off on one whole side, from what I could tell. An interesting buck, but being broke off like that, you know, he's just kind of like a ride-off type. He, like, nosed this one doe off from the group for about 2 minutes, and then we saw her come back, and he was gone.
Yeah.
So, like, he was interested because something about her was intriguing, but...
Well, that's what happened yesterday with that buck that I stalked, which we can tell that story later if we want or whatever, but... Okay. Anyway, definitely, like, this morning, I'm texting KC, like, dude, we're just plain and simple too far from any, like, good food, and... I think we just need to go. I mean, we're a couple miles from any good food. And so I'm just like, man, I think, you know, especially like this time of year, those does probably know what's fixing to happen. It's fixing to be freeze out and brown town all up in them, you know, draws and stuff. They got to relate to some food that they can get to fairly quick, and then some shelter that they can get back to pretty quick. And I think that they could have lived in that place that we were at this morning probably all summer and had nice forbs and stuff like that with live water and everything down there. But now it's a different game. And so I think that's where we were making a decision. You know, we're actually heading home now as we speak because we decided, well, we learned a few things. The rut's not full opened up because of how many does we saw without bucks harassing them.
It's going to be like 82 today.
Yeah.
And the rest of my whole family is sick. So it was like, okay, good time to go home because we have cold fronts looming for the next week.
Yeah.
And way better weather. But we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit because we're like jumping states already.
Yeah.
We got some other stuff.
Yeah. So we're headed back right now. But after I, you know, early on in the trip, the night that I killed was a really good night, man.
So let's talk a little bit. You said you hung a camera there. All right. Well, guys, y'all know we use Moultrie cell cams, Moultrie Mobile. We use the app and all that stuff. It's actually real handy.
KC's on it all the time.
I am, dude.
Loves
it's like,
it.
Well, it replaces social media for me, which is kind of a good thing. So, like, when I roll over in the morning, I look at that, and then I run to the bathroom after that. So, especially in
Kansas. Unfortunately, we didn't have a bathroom.
Oh, my goodness. Bad, bad deal.
Just throw up on the parking lot.
Squat down in a bag.
camping near the egg.
We're using these cell cams, and we've talked a lot before. Like, there's a right and a wrong way to use cell cams. You decide what it is for you. You know, don't sit in your house watching college football and wait on a deer to daylight and go out there and shoot him. It's kind of dumb, right? It kind of takes the fun out of it. And it also might make it to where they don't let us use them anymore. But they're real nice if you hunt multiple states. You don't have to be, you know, driving back and forth to check cards or, you don't have to go into places and booger them up just to check a card whenever you can just look at it on your phone, right on the app. Pretty handy. In the rut, camera hanging tactics change a little bit. And I have a couple questions, mm-hmm. or a question for you, Tyler, on mm-hmm. this, and then we'll just kind of talk about our rut camera tactics. There seems to be a sentiment out there that deer lay off scrapes during the rut. Have you heard that much?
I have heard that, yep.
How do you feel about that? Do you feel like that's the case, or do you think that scrapes are still a good place to have a trail camera during the rut?
I think scrapes are a good place to have a trail camera because I saw three scrapes yesterday. Of course, we're not, like we just said, we're not in the rut necessarily. Yeah. I mean, we're technically rut dates and things are happening, but like overall, it's not. We hadn't seen any rage fests. But I think that what a buck ends up doing at a scrape this time of year is, first of all, the scrape, if it's a good scrape, it opened up because it's on a deer highway, yeah. more than likely.
It's a good spot.
So it's a good spot.
If they walk by, they're going to lick it.
That's right. And they're going to, like, what I saw in those scrapes yesterday wasn't like a just manicured, opened up scrape. It was like three hoof swipes. It was like, whoosh, 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 and then he just rolls on. You know what I mean? And that's, I think that's what they do this time of year is they ain't got time. They're just smelling around, trying to find a doe, and they're going to go visit a scrape if it's on their way. So I don't think it's a bad thing.
I don't think so either. I think that that sentiment comes from the concept that bucks are chasing does, so they're not on the scrape, and that's like in the heat of the chase period, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that doesn't last very long. So yeah. you could, I mean, maybe like 36 hours.
Well, here's
right?
another thing and we talked about is the whole, like, the whole dating game that happens every night, right?
Yeah.
And what ends up happening is, you know, these bucks, they go and they find does, and they end up coming, following the does back to bed as they move that morning.
Or finding them after they are bedded.
Yeah.
Like at some point in the daylight, they like find some does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they settle down with some does a lot of times. Or if they don't, then they're moving on.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, that afternoon they go back and the party starts again. Well, when they're not with and actively tending a group of does that may or may not be in heat in between when they're going and checking other does and those kind of things, they're hitting those deer highways to go do that, right?
Yeah.
So it may be nighttime sign. You have to determine that based off other factors. But anyway, that's part of the deal. Plus what you're saying is like an active tending is 36 hours or whatever,
yeah.
you know.
And that lines up with a lot of the same does at the same time. So if you know that's going on, just don't worry about your scrape camera not showing you pictures. Go hunt a pinch point, kill
yeah.
a deer. You
mm-hmm.
know, like it's still for, say you have a 90-day season, 85 of the days a scrape is a great place.
Yeah.
You killed a deer in 2020 on like, what, December
28th, I think, something like that.
On a scrape.
Yeah.
And he checked it.
He checked the scrape.
Yeah.
Check two scrapes.
So it's like never a bad place to have a
no.
camera. Right?
I mean, that's then, but the thing is, where that was one of those deer highways.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, there's when you find a place where there's like limited covers too, like that can be the reason there's a scrape there.
Yeah.
Because it's a funnel. But this is another thing we talk about a lot, but when you take multiple variables, that green grass right there. But that's
water
a draw.
New yard. Yeah.
When you take multiple variables that are good and that are, you think this could be advantageous, and you line all those up in one spot, it's a great place to hunt, and you can shoot deer on scrapes on December 28th in that spot sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway,
yeah.
there's some
what
thoughts,
else was what else was close to that spot right there?
Water, food.
I was thinking food, but yeah,
yep.
water as well. Food is going to be a good place to have a trail camera during the rut, okay? A cell
yep.
camera is a great thing to hang near a food source. I would particularly say a access trail to food sources.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, deer highways are kind of one of the things we're talking about a lot here. And deer, the way deer enter food is pretty similar across the board. They're going to filter in from all different places, and then they're going to have, like, three or four places that they enter the field,
mm-hmm.
and that is the way it goes. They don't just enter anywhere they want to, right? You
yep.
can find a crossing to put a camera on in almost I haven't seen a ag food source that you couldn't find a trail.
Yeah.
That would be like the place to hang.
Dude,
right?
You're often looking for does during the rut.
Uh-huh.
And you know what's great about looking for does? There's a bunch of them, and they make a bunch of sign.
Yeah.
They will burn a trail into the ground.
Absolutely.
And so find the trail that burned into the ground and enters that food source, mm-hmm. and put a camera on it. I just did that. I literally did that an hour ago. Mm-hmm. And it's going to look awesome whenever does start showing up right there. But, like, fence lines are the place to do that, man. Mm-hmm. So, that's a great point. You know, you actually used some interesting rut/pre-rut tactics recently in Kansas, didn't you, to find some success?
Maybe. Are you talking about some stalking on public I did, or some later successes?
Later successes.
Okay. I did some stalking on public,
mm-hmm.
and those deer were definitely pre-rut. In fact, there was a buck that I chased last year that we had a real close call with this year. Same case as Tyler. He's actually smaller this year, which probably is drought related, and he's getting old. I think we kind of figured we know that deer from a few years back as well, and he's probably 7.
Mm-hmm.
So he's just getting a little older. But dude, big bucks just make you mad because they just do big buck things, and they're just good at being deer, man. They're good at living. And he did that to us. And so after that, you get in this case where, like, man, sooner or later you just get in a funk and you're like out of places to hunt. It's like you're blowing out your public spots, or there's dudes around, like we've encountered this week. There's been people everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently some stupid YouTube people are telling people to go hunt public land and stuff, and it's just ruining everything.
It's good,
for
man.
Us.
We're about to be private land guys.
That's right.
Picking because them to be privates.
I was in a funk of funks, okay? I was feeling down, like I was just mad at deer and didn't want to hunt anymore. And
dude, I know the feeling.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what people suggest. You just want to say no to it.
I know it, dude.
You know?
I know. No, it's easy to be a no man, you know?
Yeah.
Everybody wants to be yes man, but
you know,
we're really all no man.
You know where most of the no mans work?
Where's that?
In the state.
Yeah, that's true.
Government workers love to be no man.
It's just easier to say no than
it is, man. You don't have to deal with, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
No offense, y'all, but I just know that is what no men like to do.
That's right.
Hunter's a no man.
He is.
Nah, I don't think so. Nope.
How many tones can you say in?
Can y'all show me where it actually says no?
Exactly. We were feeling down, and we had said there's one thing we're not going to do this season, and that's play the call for permission game. And the one thing we did that day was do that call for permission game. And
hold on.
What?
You just said we.
I called 3 different people.
You didn't?
I did.
There's
too.
No way you called 3 people.
I did. I didn't get a hold of 3 people, but I called.
I didn't. I don't think you dialed 3 numbers, dude.
I promise you.
You
I
were
did.
Like shouting out numbers to me the whole time.
I promise you I did. But Tyler, the reason he's saying this is because he is the one who straight up got the baddest of the bad. Okay, so I have scoured on X, okay, on the. Y'all can say what you want to on Onyx, you know, crop data later, all this stuff that they have nowadays, it's real cool. But dadgummit, the tried and true property owner map on Onyx is like one of the most valuable things out there. It can tell you who's hunting next to you. It can tell you who you need to call. It can tell you who to stay away from. It can tell you all kinds of stuff.
That's right,
right?
Man. You get the wrong hunting celebrity hunting next to
That's
you,
right,
you better
dude.
Just run.
I know it, man. Dadgummit. I can't imagine if, you know, old Bill Winky's next to me. I couldn't handle it, you know.
So. I was thinking more of them ones that Donald Bader lost.
Yeah. Anyways, I have been looking at Onyx for years, and there's been a name on there that I was like, oh, I would love to hunt some of these properties. Well, it just so happens that Tyler knows the person and has talked to them in the past, and we didn't even know that.
Mm-hmm.
And line it all up, and Tyler calls this person. And he says, yeah, I got a spot.
This is a tip here, y'all.
Okay.
Y'all just, whenever you get these permissions, if y'all want to send some money our way, just be like, thanks for the pro tip. I wouldn't turn it down, okay? Because, I mean, a little bit of money here and there from this pro tip would probably help us get a lease somewhere.
Pro tip. Is it 101 or 102?
It's a 102 for sure, dude.
Been a lot of pro tips in the comment section on our YouTube channel.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot about those. In your iPhone, there is a place when you make a contact for notes. Whatever you learn from your conversations with landowners over the years, put the notes in the notes. Put their dad's name, put their wife's name, their dog's name. Oh, how's old Sparky doing, man? Oh, he passed away. Oh, well, I'm sorry to hear that. You know, like, whatever you can relate to and whatever you can know is handy. But that was a part of the deal. I think I kind of broke the ice when I called this dude. I hadn't called him in a couple of years, maybe several years, because I thought he only had, like, a little bit of acreage. And it was good, but it was a little bit. And I'd call him, and he had guys working for him that were hunting it or something. And I told him that. I was like, Al, I know you guys, you had some guys that used to hunt down there in a place down by the creek or whatever, I said. And then I told him, you know, how's your dad or whatever kind of thing, you know. Just let him know that, like, I had had a conversation with him before. I'm not just some rando from Texas with a weird accent trying to talk to him, you know. And it broke the ice, I think. And eventually, like KC was saying, I'll let you finish on from here, but he basically was like, well, there is a property down there that you might go check out.
Just so ends up that this property is one of those ones that you might look it on the map and be like, it's big, but it doesn't look very great. But then you get there and the cover's way better.
Mm-hmm.
And you also have to drive down an easement through a different place to get there.
Like a mile.
Yeah. So you're talking about remote country, right?
And it's like sub-irrigated stuff, so it kind of grows real tall.
Yeah, buddy. Like, it's one of those places that, like, maybe other people hadn't really tried to get after very much, but knowing what we know about hunting, like, if it's as tall as a deer, it's good cover.
Yeah.
And it's got a lot of tall as a deer stuff out there.
Yeah, when we showed up, we were like, oh, my goodness.
We were excited. So we actually decided to hang a trail cam on this place. And as we were hanging the camera, I get a tingle. And it turns into a jingle.
Not a rut tingle, this is, guys.
I develop the sickness. I have to go to the bathroom right then and there. So I go to the bathroom, and it's not good. We then head back to camp, and like, we have time still to scout, and I tell the guys, like, hey, I gotta get back. And head back. I spend a lot of time on the bathroom. I don't eat supper, and then pretty much up and down all night, being sick, throwing up, and going a very liquid number two. To try to put it as
TMI.
As chill as
you
can.
TMI.
It's bad, y'all. It's real bad, and it's painful. Okay, what's he doing back
He's
there?
Enjoying this.
And in fact, right now I just had a burp, like a nasty burp, like it might happen again. I don't know what's going on. But, so in a matter of like an afternoon, I get super excited about having like a bad at the bone place to hunt private land, which is awesome. All right, guys, don't put your nose up at private land, 'cause it's cool. All right.
It is.
98% of the conservation done in the U.S. is done on private land. All right. If it was not for private land, whitetails would not exist on the landscape. Okay.
Let's
get
go.
That straight.
Soapbox.
That's right. Okay, so, and it's awesome to have some private land. It's like public land, except there's nobody else there. It's really cool.
It's like public land, but better.
Yeah, exactly. So
way more fun.
Yeah, I am excited about that, and then I have this huge sickness hit that just puts me on my back and on the toilet.
Just disappeared into the cave.
Yes, dude, the same sickness cave you were in last year. And then
seven times longer.
About, I don't know, 8 hours of really bad sickness. Early in the morning, I get to feeling a little bit better. And
dude, I was sleeping on the couch. This guy's trying to fishtail right into our head on.
What is this race car looking?
Spooky.
Golly.
Yeah, I'm sitting on the couch, and all of a sudden I hear somebody moving around. And you're just talking like normal. It's like, it reminds me of Journey, because she's like, she can just wake up and be talking immediately, like full on. You know how I wake up and just sit up after my alarm and stuff?
Uh-huh.
That's Journey too. And you were just in there, just like bright eye, bushy tail. I was like, hold up, is this the same cat that I know?
I was convincing myself that I had to go hunting that day.
Yeah.
Because it's a cold front day.
Yeah.
It's the temps dropped 20 degrees that day, and I'd been sick all night long, and I like, here's what I told myself, okay? And this is not how I feel about myself, but this is how I, like, as I'm older, I want people to think this about me. I want people to say, I'll take a sick-as-a-dog Casey Smith over a regular guy anytime to go hunting. That's what I want people to think, you know? So, like, I said, well, if I'm going to want that, then I better go do it.
Yep.
And I made myself do it. I'm not trying to be a tough guy. I felt terrible. But I got to feeling better that morning, and prayed a lot that night. I said this later that day, but like when you're sick as a dog and you can't really sleep very good, you got a lot of time to pray and a lot of time to listen, okay? And I willed it to get up that morning, and we got out there a little bit late, but I was slow moving, but it was like, well, at least I'm going. Right, and we were going to hunt on the ground, and in fact, our plan was to hunt on the ground and kind of make a plan for the evening, kind of observe deer and see where maybe we should set up that evening, maybe use a decoy, because we thought it'd be a pretty good decoying spot. We actually, looking back, we had glassed some deer down on one end of this property near some cover, and we're thinking that we could use a decoy because we saw a pretty good buck down there. The wind wasn't right for us to make an approach that afternoon, so we were like, well, let's do it tomorrow. Well, Greg and I go out there, we are hunting, but we are glassing a lot more than anything. And here's another rut tactic we need to talk about. If you're in more open country, and even if you're not, pay attention to fence lines when you're glassing, because deer relate to fence lines, not because they like fences, but because they are timid about jumping fences. They don't like to jump fences. They do it every day, but it ain't just like something they just love to do. So they'll cruise a fence line because it's a good place to smell, but also like it ends up being a semi-boundary for a deer. And they have certain places they like to cross that fence, just like they have certain places they like to go into ag food sources. Well, just sure enough, we're glassing this place, and I spot a deer on a fence line that's about 500 yards away, directly upwind, pretty much. And I could tell right away it's most likely a buck. Well, actually, right away I thought it was like a piece of metal on the fence or something. And then I got to looking, and I was like, no, that's a deer. And just by the way, it's, you know, by itself, and it looks pretty big at distance, it's probably a buck. And then I put my binos on it, and from 500 yards away, it is a 100% shooter, first time on the property type deer, okay? So at 500 yards, there's really only one thing you can do besides try to cut this deer off, and it's way too open for us to do that, and that's rattle, because that's the only thing you can do loud enough to get that deer's attention. And 500 yards is pushing it. It's fairly still this morning, so I think we can do it, but I really think all that deer's hearing at that distance is clack, clack. Like every once in a while, he's hearing something that he recognizes as antlers, because that's so far, you know, like it's going to be, we need to experiment with it at some point in time, but like get way far away and rattle. And
dude, see. I just think that deer perceive that stuff differently. I think that they perceive it differently than we do, because I think that they spend time in quiet environments all the time,
yeah.
And we don't. And so we don't hear the intricacies of the rattling from distance that they hear. That's
it's possible.
This is just hypothetical, but I just feel like that they spend time in those environments so much that any odd sound they pick up and perceive it and like hyper perceive that stuff because they're so used to their environment that they're in. Whereas we might be out in the woods yesterday, it's super quiet, and we might be out in the woods today and it's super windy and so it feels loud, but really it's because we don't have hair in our ears like a deer.
They got so much fuzz in there.
Yeah, I just feel like their environment is very static from a Audible's perspective.
Yeah. But it's still a long ways.
Yeah. I just think that they can hear that stuff and think about it and process it differently than we do because probably, we're so just noise is in the air for us all the time.
Yeah, you're probably right. But I do change my rattling technique whenever I'm rattling at a deer that's far, far away.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa, I just hit a button. If I have a deer that's like within 100 yards, I'm going to click, you know, kind of do some of that stuff.
Yep.
When he's far away, I'm whack, whack, whack. Like I'm making those hard pops, making sure he hears. And I also probably don't, once he does hear, I usually stop pretty quick after that.
Yeah, me too.
Because you can tell with their body language pretty quickly what they're going to do. And this deer for sure was interested as soon as he heard. And so I rattled a little bit more just to kind of convince him and just put the antlers down. And I could tell he was just thinking it over real hard. And when they start doing that, it's already a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like if he's thinking about it pretty good, then, you know, there's a thing that happens to deer like that where they hear it and then they look straight ahead. And then you're like, oh, he's got something else on his mind. But this deer never looked straight ahead. He looked at us, and then he looked behind him where he just came from, and he looked back at us. And, like, I knew pretty quick, like, this is probably going to work. And then he turns 180 and starts going the other way down the fence where he just came from, and I knew it was happening at that point in time. Because that means that deer has a particular place that he wants to cross the fence, back where he just came from. And that's exactly what happened. This deer turns 180, goes down, crosses the fence, and cuts down into the bottom. And at that point in time, I'm thinking, all right, he's going to try to go get downwind of us and smell what's going on over here because he can't see the deer. And we've got a little rise right in front of us before the bottom starts. And I'm thinking, okay, these deer, I've rattled and called to a lot of deer, especially this year. Deer can pinpoint within 10 yards where that sound is coming from. Like you were talking about how they can perceive things differently. Mm. They are so good at it, it's unreal. He knows exactly where that rattling is coming from.
It is unreal, man.
And I, from experience, I know that if I want to kill this deer, I got to get up on this thing to where he's looking behind me, and I can shoot him as soon as he thinks he can see where that sound came from. So as soon as this deer kind of gets behind cover, I take off sprinting down the hill with a big knot in my stomach, you know, of course, because I'm still a little sick. I sprinted about 80 yards downhill, got set up in some brush, and kind of made a little ground upwind. How should I say that?
So you're working downwind so that he cannot get your wind, basically.
So, yeah.
Like you're trying to cut him off before he gets your wind.
Exactly. I think that he's going to come get our wind at like 80 yards.
Yes.
And I want him to try to get, and I want to be closer than that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. When he gets to wherever your wind is, you want to be, you know, within 40 yards.
Yes, exactly. So I'm gonna take some of that distance off because I ain't trying to shoot an 80 yard shot.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I do. I make the distance down the hill. I also go into that deer's travel path some. That way I can kind of cut some of that distance that direction as well. Greg comes in behind me. We can see the deer down through the brush at like 100 yards. He's working his way up to us. We're kind of freaking out a little bit. I know he's a shooter. I don't realize how big this deer is.
How do you know he's a shooter?
because I could tell by his body size that he was at least 4, and that was kind of what I was going for.
I was kind of making a joke that he might have looked a lot like a field goal post or something.
Well, I'm not quite there yet. I didn't realize that. I knew he was wide. I could tell he was wide from a ways off, and that's kind of another thing. I was like, okay, if a deer's wide, he's probably like fairly old. You know, he's not a 3-year-old, most likely. And I didn't know how wide, though, because there's this proportion thing that deer do where it's like a body size to antler size thing where it's like
And people are always like, oh, man, Texas deer, they grow wide, man, Texas deer.
Yeah.
It's like, well, they're just 140 pounds, so they're still 17 inches, and even though they look like heart attack.
There's a 13-inch rule in East Texas, and they show the ear tip thing for 13 inches. Well, that's on like a 2- or 3-year-old.
Yeah.
A full-grown buck is going to have 15, 16-inch wide ears, depending on the deer, right? So, like, that ear tip thing is for, like, the youngins, right? And so you have this proportionality thing going on to where, like, a big-bodied deer, you can't really tell sometimes until you get your hands on them how big they are, right? Well, this deer was like that. I didn't realize how big he was until he came up and cleared the brush at, like, 35 and goalposts, okay? This thing, all I can see is brow tines, okay? They are straight up, and I can't even see how wide he is because his antlers don't fit between gaps in the brush, okay? Spooky! And he's looking right into the sun, right at us, cannot make us out because he's getting pelted with sun rays in his eyeballs. It couldn't have worked out more perfect.
I have a theory I want to talk about in regards to this.
So you want me to finish this part of the story, or where do you want to
do it? Yeah, I
think so. Okay. He then takes another step behind brush, and I draw. Because I'm trying to decide if I'm trying. So there's two things you can do in this situation. You can draw to stop them, which I think is spooky, because they could just spook when you do that. Mm-hmm. Or you could try to draw when they're behind something and then grunt stop them or allow them to stop on their own. I've opted for the latter. However, he did see the movement of my draw, and he stopped when I didn't have a shot.
Oof.
Yeah, real scary. I'm at full draw. I'm also have been sick for 10 hours at this point in time, super dehydrated. After about 10 seconds, I'm already quivering, which is pretty bad for me. Like, I try to be, you know, decent of shape and pretty strong upper body guy. So
we'll just say that you held for over 2.5 minutes on the Gila Bull in 19.
I was as shaky at 10 seconds as I was at a minute 45 on the Bull in the Gila, if that can kind of tell you where I was as far as my physical status at that point. And I'm thinking, okay, I can't do this. I can't have a standoff with this deer. So I don't know where I got the guts to do this. I don't know if I'd even do it again. But in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, he's looking right at us. He isn't spooked. I go, and just give him a soft snort wheeze at full draw at like 35 yards. And the deer's looking right at me when I do it. I ain't even suggesting you do it. I don't think it was a good idea, but I did it, and it worked.
You know what? You know what it did? He almost bolted, but then he realized what it was.
Shook his head just a little bit. Yep.
And then his ears like relaxed.
Yeah. He said, "Oh, that's a deer."
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what happened. It literally relaxed him.
Yeah. Weird, huh?
Yeah. Wild.
And he then takes a couple steps forward. I mac him and shoot him down. Now, it wasn't my best shot. It was like a high lung liver that ended up cutting the pulmonary artery. It was right below spine pretty much. But it did the job well. I would say it was still vitals. It wasn't like back in the guts, right? And, I take that back. It did. He was quartering twos. There was some guts in there as well, but it got some good stuff, and he bled like crazy and spun out. And that's when I do this thing where I kind of block out the antler some, but as soon as the shot happens, I see how big they are, and he spun out, and I was like, oh my gosh, I just shot the biggest deer I've ever shot. And he goes out and kind of just goes to sleep about 80 yards from us, and
it's wild. You could tell,
freak out.
You could tell the that you cut that artery back, because his back end started like to not work before his front end, and he just kind of had to, like you said, eventually lay down and then go to sleep.
Yep, he just kind of sat down. We were freaking out a little bit and glassed him, and then his head went down, and then I just laid on the ground and tried to breathe. It was insane.
Oh, man.
And so,
talk about your arrow setup
a little bit. You had a point?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, since you were on it, just talk about, like, so this arrow went front, it went through, you know, probably some rib cage, I think, didn't it?
It did.
It hit rib cage on the front side?
Yeah.
And then came out, like, through the meat on the back hip, probably part of it, right?
Yeah. So lots of passage there. A lot of deer it's going through.
So you probably were shooting like a two blade fixed, right?
Yeah, little tiny. One, just
to get that kind
cut.
Of penetration,
yeah.
Right?
No, actually, do we even talk about Illinois on a podcast? I don't remember.
I don't either.
So I shot a deer in Illinois with a fixed blade. I like fixed blades in certain situations. I think a fixed blade helped me there. But this go around, especially in the open country, in windy country, especially since I was sick and not my top self, I opted for the three blade big mechanical. And I think that was super helpful because that made sure I hit something very vital. And I think he would have died with a tiny little fixed as well, but it might have been a let him sit for 6 hours type thing. You know, I don't know. I do know that this was super effective. I'm shooting a Vector HMR at about 540 grains, and it's flying at about 263 foot per second with a big mechanical on the front, and I have yet to shoot a deer this season. I've shot five of them. I've yet to shoot a deer that wasn't a complete pass-through. I mean, arrow out of the deer, I'm saying.
And that's like, with some quarters, aways, and twos.
Yeah, quarters, aways, and twos. so, and some bonage in there as well.
Yep.
So, it's pretty effective setup, man. If you are a guy who poo-poos on the mechanicals, maybe you should try one. I was a guy who used to poo-poo on the fixed stuff a little bit. And then I tried it, and I was like, it's not too bad. But and everything has a time and a place. There's something else like that. Oh, I was that guy who did that with rests. I used to think that limb-driven rests were dumb. I still kind of do, but I like mine. I have just had some weird things. I probably have told you about it, but the rats chewed my string in half in Nebraska, and then it was real hard to deal with after that. But I actually think I like the limb-driven rest a lot. And I used to be a guy who would say that you shouldn't use one of those. So if you think you hate something a whole lot, maybe you should check it out. So, anyways.
Everybody's kind of got a voice these days, and it's easy to just be a hater have a voice. You know?
Yeah, to hop in a certain demographic without, you know, people are tribal, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, hey, I want to hop in there because there's a lot of people over there like that. I can be like them. You know? Well, man, just be yourself.
Yeah.
So
if you really want to be tribal, you should follow Jesus.
Yeah, there you go.
You know what I mean? That's pretty good tribe to be
kinda,
a part of.
Kind of cultural. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but you're still a part of a
right.
tribe that has hope, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I had a theory.
Okay.
Are we ready for this?
I think so.
Okay. My theory is that a southwest wind on a sunny day is a perfect ground game day.
Sounds good to me. I could see that.
Do you know why?
It's a perfect morning, at least.
Why morning? Yes, morning. Yep,
because
that's right.
The sun is coming up in the east.
Yes.
And so that deer feels good about traveling. But if you are glassing from the east or on the ground east of that deer, he has to come into the sun to come get you. But he still thinks he can get around you and smell you.
That's right. So the deer, essentially, in the morning, the ideal situation to glass is looking to the west because everything's lit up, right? So you glass to the west, you find a buck, you call at him. Where does that deer want to go? He wants to get up, he wants to circle up to the north and try to get to the northeast of whatever he heard so he can smell it. And if you work up to him like KC did, you've got the sun at your back still, because if you can work up and catch him before he gets to the northeast of you and he's actually northwest of you or north, he's looking back towards the southeast sun rising and he's blinded and doesn't have your wind. And we saw that happen in 2018 as well.
Exactly.
Where we almost got
that's
a deer.
Exactly right. I just missed. And that's where things are different. I actually have changed my arrow setup quite a bit since then.
Yeah.
And it seems to have helped. To that note that you just made, also something to think about is you need to remember that the sun doesn't just rise directly in the east. Throughout the fall until December 21st, that sun is moving further south on the horizon every day. It's tiny bits, right? But keep in mind, it's not going to rise directly east. It's going to rise a little bit to the south, just like what you were saying. So that north or southwest is really, really great for that, because that deer is going to be on the northeast. It's a good thought, man.
Yeah, I literally realized that the same day you shot your deer and we're talking about how it worked. That's what I was thinking about.
Yeah.
And yesterday, I don't want to get ahead too far. We had a southeast wind. Mm-hmm. You know what happened there. Mm-hmm. We almost got it done still.
Think about this. In 2021, Eric and I were set up with a decoy on the ground and rattled in a big old drop time buck with a northeast wind, but he was still west of us. But instead of him looping around to the north side of us, he came in on the south side of us and smelled us up and ran away.
Yeah.
And that was the difference. You know, if we had the southwest wind, then we had killed that deer, or at least shot at him.
Right.
So, pretty interesting thought there, man. I like that a lot.
Yeah, something to think about.
That buck, biggest buck of my life. Go check it out on Instagram. You can actually see a couple of the deer that Tyler and I have shot in Kansas lately on the IG.
Mm-hmm.
And those deer will be releasing next summer on the Meat Eater series that we're doing.
I wish y'all could watch them now, you know, because I know, like, Eric, for instance, one of the things that drew him to us was the fact that he could watch the video and then hear about it on the podcast, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which you'll be able to do. It just has to be next summer, and you have to go back into the podcast catalog and listen to the story if you want that again, you know? So, but yeah, they will be out like mid to late summer, early fall, somewhere in there, on that Meat Eater YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. So we're excited about that. We're excited to be producing something. We have a lot of help with Michael, Eric, and Greg this year to produce what is going to be. If you think that our content has been awesome, our video and our videos on our channel have been awesome, and you like them a lot, and you think, oh, they do a good job, they try high production, you know, try to make it the best production value they can, blah, blah, blah. If you're into that kind of stuff, probably not many of you are. It's going to be better this year by far.
I am biased, but I think what we're putting together is some of the baddest stuff that you're going to probably be able to watch.
I do too. I mean,
I think this is going to be sick.
I mean, and you are biased, sure, but we are trying to do that.
Yeah.
That's what we're trying to do.
I mean, we know our audience. We know who y'all are listening. Think about some of our better stuff, some of the better THP stuff, some of the better whitetail adrenaline stuff. That's what we're trying to put together in a series this time, and it is coming together so great.
Yeah.
And we are super stoked about it.
It is, man.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you've been shooting a bunch of deer.
I've shot a few. I've been blessed. You've had a couple of your best seasons ever so far, and then I kind of finally get to have one of those, and I'm kind of excited about it. So, but the cool thing is you're still having a real good season too, because you shot a couple really big bucks.
If I had just made the shot on the South Dakota buck, I would still be on pace to have maybe my best season ever.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I still could be, depending.
Yeah, because
we got some hunts.
Got some big hunts coming up.
Yeah, I just kind of like, I think some of the bunts that are coming up. I feel like, I guess, for lack of a better word, trophy potential or quality potential is a little less than what we've been through already.
I think that as I do this travel thing a little more, though, like, that's only part of it. It's a big part of it.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not going to be one of those guys that downplays the trophy aspect, because
we walked up on a deer yesterday that just freaked me out, so I like that aspect
yes.
of it. You know?
Like, I have enough food for the year.
Uh-huh.
All right, I don't have to keep killing deer to eat, but I'm going to keep killing deer because I love it, and I'm going to share meat with people, and it's going to be fine. Like, better to have more than not less, right? Because I've been in that situation where I'm like out in East Texas with a muzzleloader trying to shoot a doe in January. You know, like, I don't want that, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's fun to go shoot trophies, but you know what else is cool, man? Is like, you have an opportunity to kill a deer in a new state in a couple weeks. And, like, that's a big deal for you.
Yeah.
I know. And then we get to hunt, like, a new part of some states that we've never hunted. And, like, that's a huge part of, like, what can make a best season ever.
Yeah. Well, you know? I'm learning a lot, too, man. Like, some of the things that we're going to hunt and have hunted this year are so different than some of the things that we've done. And so, and also the different times of year that we've hunted are just, like, teaching me so much, man. I say this every year, but this year I may learn more this year than I ever have learned in a season about deer hunting.
Uh-huh.
So I'm pretty excited about that, because you know, it makes it to where when you go on a trip, like, you feel like a pretty good got chance of killing some deer, you know?
Yeah.
And, I mean, I've had a chance on every trip pretty much. I mean, I almost killed bucks twice in this last trip, and I don't we're leaving from. I don't know if it's something we want to talk about or if we want to do that on another podcast or
let's,
what.
Let's table that one a little bit.
That sounds good to me.
But we'll just tease it. That
yeah,
way,
y'all.
Yeah. Just it's just gotta instead wait. Of season, it's teasing. You know what I'm saying? You know how we do.
Yeah, you know how they do.
If you're not in our text group, you know, you might just try to get on the end because we like to send them teaser pics.
Yeah.
But shoot a lot of Forkies.
Forkies
yeah,
only.
That's right. Anyways.
You don't have to be lonely. ForkiesOnly.com.
Yeah. We did leave Kansas and went somewhere with the intent to sit in a tree a little bit more, and that was nice.
Yeah.
I got to spend some time in my cruiser saddle. Got to use my mini seeker platform.
In fact, you tested your cruiser.
I did test
potential
it.
Max of safety.
I don't even know if I maxed it out, man. I did give it the full-fledged test.
You had to have been 6 feet off the ground or something.
I know, exactly. That's the OSHA proof. But if you like the seeker platform, but want a lighter version, the Seeker Mini, I do suggest. I absolutely love mine. It's not as wide, but it's actually probably a little more stable, I would say, because you don't have – it's not so wide that you kind of get a little bit of side pressure that makes that thing kick out as much. So it's super nice, super lightweight.
I've got to spend more time in it before I know for sure which one I like better, but I like it.
Goes in my pack, which is nice. The other one doesn't go in my pack. So that's cool. I like that about it. But go check those out. They're for sale on Cruiser's website now. Helps their buddy Chad out, too, because that's a good dude. I've been texting with him. Bro is having some eye problems and can't, like, see out of his peep's eye. Which I've joked with him about astigmatism, but apparently it's another thing. It's not actually astigmatism. He said it's some type of autoimmune thing that runs in his family that makes his vision go bad. So... hope that gets a little better for him. He said muzzleloader season is about to start, and he's going to bust out the smoke pole if he needs to.
There you go.
Yeah, might as well. You know, like
put a big old scope on that thing.
That's right, dude. Just
you can see real well.
Yeah, that's right. More deer going down, guys. It is the rut. Don't think that because November 7th has passed that the rut is over. My goodness, it is going hard right now, and it's going to get even better. Again, there's these things that radiate out of the central Midwest, like the thoughts of what the best rut dates are. The best rut date is the day you kill your deer. And I can promise you that all the way up till Thanksgiving, it is really, really good. And depending on where you're at in the country, it's really, really good after that.
Yeah. So, well, something we've been thinking about, too, is that, you know, we saw so many does this morning without bucks. And there's a possibility. There's some biologists going to listen to this and be hacked at me saying this. I'm just making a hypothesis here, okay? It might be wrong. There's a possibility, or I guess you might have said this first, but I really am digging into this.
We kind of have the same brain, so that's fine.
The drought is affecting the estrus cycle somehow, and that it is affecting the at least perceived rut right now.
Between that and calendar dates, like, golly, you know, the whole month of August didn't even exist until Augustus Caesar added it. So guess what? Deer used to rut in October before then, you know what I mean? Or whatever. So, like, I'm kind of making a joke there, but we have this thing called leap year. And that means, like, every 4 years there's an extra day. So, like, our calendar dates aren't as specific as you'd like to think they are.
Yeah.
November 7th isn't the same day of the year every year.
Right.
Like, our moon is on like a 28 and a quarter day cycle, right? So, like, that's what the months actually kind of go off of. So, if you take that, I'm just going to do some quick math, but I would say, like, peak rut dates can at least vary a week, I think, on a yearly basis.
Yeah.
So, if it's November, it's November 9th, we're recording this. November 9th, and you're not seeing a ton of rut action yet, do not despair. Do not fret. Do not worry. Because guess what? The deer are going to do it. Okay? They have to make more deers.
How many research papers are going to be in our inbox after this?
Who knows, dude? Let me tell you something. Same people writing research papers are getting quadruple vaxxed right now. Okay? I'm saying it. So I ain't too worried about that. It's goofy. All right, you just need to get out there and hunt. I'm not saying you, but yeah, all y'all get out there and hunt, man. This is the time of year. It can happen at any point in time.
Dang, dude, that's a t-shirt right there. All y'all hunt.
That's right. All y'all hunt. Well, remember to go hunt, mm-hmm. and remember, this is your element.
Live in it.
Market House has the cleanest, leanest, juiciest meat and seafood shipped to your home overnight. Expect the service of a local butcher and the convenience of a large supplier. Unlike many online butchers, you can grab just one meal's worth or lock in for a subscription box. Choose from grass-fed and grass-finished beef, American Wagyu, free-range poultry, grass-fed lamb, wild-caught king crab, seafood, and more.
For 15% off your first order, use code COUNTRY at checkout. Just visit markethouse.com.
That's markethouse.com. And use the code COUNTRY. You ever get that feeling? The walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins.